Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Caroline, Willie, D-Base, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Tennessee Superbook is the number one sports book in Las Vegas. Joining us now, Outkick 360's Chad Withrow. Normally, Chad joins Jared at 5 o'clock, but with the Predators game tonight, a little bit of a shorter show for Stillman & Company, so Chad will be joining us. Chad Withrow, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford, now with a huge inventory of in-stock vehicles to choose from. Chad, huge Titans game tomorrow. I am under the belief that I won't get anyone in trouble for something that they didn't do. But if the Titans do lose tomorrow night, I think someone, if not multiple people, deserve to lose their jobs. How do you feel?
Well, first off, I want to thank you guys for not shouting at me as I join your show. I'm so accustomed to that. This is amazing to be greeted with such politeness from the show.
We're so happy to have you, Chad.
This is so pleasant. I'm now jealous of Huntley. Joining your show weekly, and just I feel so comfortable and at ease as I come on the show.
You're always welcome.
Look, I mean, this is great. To your question, though, Caroline, you know what should happen with firings or people losing their job? John Robinson losing his job obviously is that's if we're playing the blame game here. Amy Adams Strunk is saying he's to blame for all of this. And it happened mid-season. I've been consistent with this. I just don't understand why you make that move in season. I think you let things play out. I don't know that the Titans win a game or two, and if they're clear of the Jags going into this game, if they don't fire John Robinson. But, guys, we know what happened after they fired him, that they've been terrible. And this losing streak has continued, and there was just no benefit to doing it when Amy Adams Strunk did it, other than I don't know if it's looking tough. We're trying to send some sort of signal to everyone that you mean business. But doing it in season didn't help anyone or anything with this Titans team. So, you know, who's to blame for what happened this season? Obviously, injuries are close to the top of the list. So I don't think there's anyone to fire when it comes to that. Then you keep going down the line. We already mentioned John Robinson. He's almost without a job. It's the offense. I mean, it's Todd Downing. I don't think there's any guessing about it. If anyone's going to lose their job, post-Jags game, regardless of outcome. And I don't think it's just, honestly, Caroline, I don't think it's just lose this game and Todd Downing is probably going to be gone. I would assume the Titans are going to be looking for a new offensive coordinator, win or lose in Jacksonville, based on the direction of this offense and based on the uncertainty moving forward of what you want to be offensively. Derrick Henry's not going to be Derrick Henry forever. The offensive line needs to be completely rebuilt. It's a short future with Ryan Tannehill, if there's a future at all. Wide receiver, you still got to figure out after trading away A.J. Brown. Burks looks pretty good, but, I mean, you're going to have to go up to the dry erase board and almost wipe everything off and start from scratch offensively. And I don't think anyone that watches the Titans thinks that Todd Downing should be the guy to be able to have that eraser and then have the marker to go back to the dry erase board and put everything back together.
Chad Withrow is with us, Outkick 360. I'm with you. I think win or lose this game, Todd Downing needs to be out. Because any winning that the Titans have done, I think have more so been in spite of Todd Downing rather than anything Todd Downing has done to this offense. But you say the injuries, that's not anybody's fault or nobody should get fired for that. And normally I would agree with you, but I look at the Titans the past 2 years. They've had more players on IR than any other team in the NFL in the last 2 years. I mean, that's a massive sample size. And I don't know who that falls on. I don't know if that falls on the trainers. I don't know if that falls falls on, you know, the training processes. I don't know if that falls on just the system that this football team plays with, but something's got to give with the injuries, because when the Titans are at the absolute top of the league in an area that you don't want to be, and that's injuries, something's got to change.
Yeah, I think most of it's bad luck. Here's my – it's a simple premise for me when I look at injuries. If there's any type of soft tissue injury, I think most of the time that can be prevented in some way. It's not always the player's fault when it happens, but it does feel like there is a level of preparation, and Dee Mace and Willie can talk more to this, but there's a level of preparation involved to get warmed up, to make sure you're ready to go, to be explosive, and try to avoid some soft tissue injuries. So if there's a bunch of that going on, then I think you can point the finger at the strength and conditioning staff and say, okay, that's an issue, and we need to address it moving forward. I also think people get fired all the time in sports when they're just really unlucky, and maybe that's just kind of what needs to happen here to freshen things up, because I think most of what's happening to the Titans is just a lot of unlucky moments. There's no level of strength and conditioning that can stop Treylon Burks from getting knocked unconscious on the field in Philadelphia and still catching that touchdown pass. There are just certain freak things that happen playing football, and you lose guys for multiple weeks that you can't look back on and say, oh, that's the fault of a strength conditioning coach or whatever a team is doing to get ready for the game. But I do think if you've got a large number of soft tissue injuries, then you can start to look at the strength conditioning staff. I don't know that they should make a move there, but I also think that we can point to a lot of examples of coaches or players getting cut or things happening that's just unlucky, but yet they still lose their job. That's kind of the way it goes at times when you're playing a game of chance like this, and maybe that's what ends up happening, just the Titans needing some different mojo with this injury issue that they decided to go in a different direction. I don't know what they're going to do there, but I think most of what we've witnessed with this team the last 2 years has been just a very unlucky string of injuries.
We'll talk with Chad Withrow, Outkick 360. Now, Chad, I rewatched the game the other day, and because Caroline and I did a segment along with Willie at breaking down the film of Joshua Dobbs. But in the midst of watching Joshua Dobbs, I noticed that there was a portion of, I believe, the third or fourth quarter where the Tennessee Titans, who have not been a consistent offensive team throwing the football, they chose to have Raider on the field rather than Chigakonkwo, and whether it be their two tight end sets or not. And to me, that's something that as a head coach, regardless of what's going on the field, regardless of what package is being called, as a head coach, you should be able to supersede that and say, hey, listen, this offense isn't consistent enough to not have our playmakers on the field. Find a way to get Chigakonkwo on the field. Do you think a lot of the blame falls on ultimately Vrabel for that not happening?
I mean, I think you hit on a very important point here with the Titans offense. And if you talk to coaches, so many of the ones that have been around the longest time, I remember talking to Coach Doug Matthews about this a long time ago, and he would always say that the biggest thing that Johnny Majors at Tennessee would get angry about was on a big third down or a big fourth down, the head coach would look up and notice that the best player on the offense wasn't on the field. And that would force him to call a timeout and usually ream out the coach that had that substitution in that moment. That in those moments, you have to have players on the field. If you're going to throw the ball, you want your best pass targets on the field. It sounds pretty simple, right? But coaches sometimes outthink themselves and decide to go a different route when it comes to personnel with that. So I look at that and think that that's always a mistake as well. There's only really two encouraging parts of this Titans offense this season to me. And it's Chigakonkwo, and it's Treylon Burks. Treylon Burks, after a very rough start, has been encouraging in his improvement so far this season. So I want to see more and more of those guys. These last few weeks, while they've still been in the playoff mix, to me has been more about finding out what you have with some of these young guys. It was about finding out what you have with Malik Willis. And then you start Josh Dobbs. It's about finding out if Josh Dobbs gives you a better option to beat Jacksonville and get in the playoffs than Malik Willis. And I think he proved that he probably does give you a better chance. Don't know what that chance is, but you're doing a lot of things to see what you have, not just for the future next year, but for these last remaining games. So for Sidney Kirkwell, who's had a great rookie year and a guy that I think could become a big-time pass-catching target and a threat in the pass game for the Titans, he needs to be on the field in those moments. And something else that jumped out to me, and I'd be curious what you think about this, D-Mace, but watching the offense with Malik Willis and Josh Dobbs, I'm not there in practice all the time to know exactly what those guys will do and what they can't do in practice. But I did think that some of the things they were doing with Dobbs, some of the bootlegs to the left or rollouts to the right to just eliminate the pocket and get him throwing on the move, I wanted to see some more of that with Malik Willis. Now, I thought that they should start Dobbs. I'm glad they did, just to find out if he's better right now. And Josh Dobbs is not going to be some long-term starter in the NFL, but I do think with his experience and his skill set and his mindset, he gives them a better chance right now. But I would have liked to have seen some of those play calls and some of those designs with Malik Willis when they had a chance to see what he could do earlier this year.
No, you're right about that, Chad. When I watched the game the first time and I noticed how many times they got Joshua Dobbs outside the pocket, I was wondering, man, these plays sure do look different with Dobbs in here than they did with Malik. He did not call these plays. Now, why he didn't call them, we don't know. Maybe he felt that Malik couldn't, you know, grasp, you know, the rollout concepts, and they had to keep everything in the pocket for him. But I think that would have, you know, at least given him an opportunity to get outside the pocket, get away from the rush, because the offensive line hasn't done a good job at blocking, and to allow him to at least see the field without anybody in front of him. Why they chose not to do that, only they know. But then again, they chose to do it with Joshua Dobbs, and it worked out perfectly for them. And I'm sure we will see more of that in this game versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. What I do want to ask you, Chad, when we come back for break, is your assessment of Malik Willis. I mean, not Malik Willis, but your assessment of Joshua Dobbs. We've had everybody talk about him. I've heard Hutton talk about him because he's been on, but I haven't heard you yet. And I would like to see or hear what you thought of Joshua Dobbs in his first start.
We'll get into that with Chad coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, joins us now. Chad Withrow, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford, now with a huge inventory of in-stock vehicles to choose from. Josh Dobbs, of course, named the starter against Jacksonville. I think we can all agree that that was the right decision made by Mike Vrabel. But D-Mace asked you this question before the break, Chad. Your interpretation of Josh Dobbs' first start?
I thought, all things considering, the short amount of time he was there and a great Cowboys defense with, a limited playbook, but it looks like they weren't holding back a lot. They're holding back a lot more with Malik Willis, who had been there a lot longer. I thought he was really good. I mean, it's tough to ask for much more from Josh Dobbs. He wasn't perfect. You know, he had the fumble. He had the interception. He should have had another interception that Diggs just dropped in the game. But he also hit Robert Woods perfectly for a big gain that was dropped. I think Treylon Burks had another drop. But the key for me with Josh Dobbs was the biggest difference between him and Malik Willis, I think, right now. When Malik Willis drops back and he is a pocket quarterback and he is in the pocket, it never looks natural for Malik Willis. It always looks a little bit discombobulated. I thought Josh Dobbs looked more natural in the pocket. And he doesn't come from a pro-style offense in college. For everyone that watched him at Tennessee, it's very much a spread offense where he ran the ball a lot. But he's now been in the NFL long enough where he can throw from the pocket. And more importantly, he can look comfortable in the pocket and throwing from there. So I thought we saw a lot more of that with Josh Dobbs than we saw from Malik Willis. I like some of the little wrinkles with the bootlegs and getting him out of the pocket to run or throw and just giving him an option or two in the pass game, and then if not, take off and run. I've said it before, they should have done more of that with Malik Willis. But all in all, I mean, it's a pretty remarkable performance for a guy who'd only been there with the Titans for 8 days. And I'm excited to see what he can do against Jacksonville, a Jacksonville defense that's not nearly as good as the Cowboys defense. And now with Derrick Henry in the backfield with him, I think Josh Dobbs should take another step up in this game against the Jags as opposed to what we saw against the Cowboys, which really wasn't that bad.
Chad Withrow is with us from Outkick. So, Chad, this is, I feel like I'm in a hot tub time machine here. I was trying to figure out, I think this is our first on-air conversation since, what, 2011?
Yeah, I was thinking about that coming on here, Willie. I'm getting strong 6 p.m. at night vibes right now on air with
yeah.
you. And I think it would be probably 2011. I was probably getting ready for a high school football show and being on air for 6 hours at night and talking to you beforehand was probably the last time we were on air together. So it's been a long time, but it's great. It's an honor and a privilege to be back on with you, my friend.
Yes, same here. So maybe you could give the background. What was your first year that you joined our show back in the day when I was younger, but you were a lot younger?
It was 2004. It was right around late July, early August 2004 when I graduated from Tennessee and started as an intern. And I was an intern from July until the end of the year and was hired on as kind of an executive producer that was organizing everything for the old show, and worked from as a producer until 2006 solely, and then started with high school football in 06. Willie, you and I started hosting a show together from 6 to 7 p.m. in 2009. So all told, we are now 19 years into the future of that hot tub time machine that you referenced from when I started working as an intern for your show until now. So it's been a long time. I you were older than me then, Willie, but it's funny that I look back now and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm now much older than you were when I thought you were old when I started working for you. So it's amazing. I don't know how old you are now, but I mean, you must be ancient because I'm feeling really old at this point.
Yes. And we both have daughters who go by Evie. Even though they have different full names, they both have the same nickname. So that is crazy. So this is a reunion, everybody. This is a piece of history. But, Chad, let me ask you a question going back to your Tennessee roots. When you watched Josh Dobbs each week back then, did you envision an NFL quarterback at any time? I think he's done very well, is where I'm going, my opinion, to be in the league this long. And we've been talking about this all week. This is a huge opportunity for him to try to win another contract and maybe stay in the league for, who knows, if he plays well, several more years.
It's funny because watching him at Tennessee, he went the fourth round, I believe it was, to Pittsburgh when he came out finally after his senior year. Willie, I thought that he was just going to be a career backup and a great locker room piece for someone. I never envisioned him being a full-time starter. And he still hasn't been that yet in his NFL career. But I did think that, man, this is the perfect backup quarterback. The guy is going to understand any playbook quickly. He's going to be a great help for the starter wherever he is. He's going to be a really good teammate. You don't have to worry about him getting in trouble or embarrassing you and your organization. So I always thought that he was going to be a 10 to 15-year backup quarterback in the league if he wanted and get a chance to spot start at times, kind of like he is right now. But I never foresaw it taking, I think this is his sixth or seventh year, I believe, to get his first start in the league with the Titans. But I've also never seen him as real starting material in the NFL. It's really for this reason. He was great at Tennessee. He was a winner. I can't imagine what the Butch Jones era would have looked like at times if Josh Dobbs wasn't there to bail them out of some bad plays with his legs and some of the big runs he had over the course of his career. But you go back to that South Carolina game in 2016, I think is one example that comes to mind. There were games, it feels like every two or three games or even for a quarter over the course of a game where Josh Dobbs, for lack of a better phrase, he would skip rocks during the game. I mean, he would just start skipping the ball or it would start sailing on him just inexplicably where he was inaccurate at times over the course of his Tennessee career. So I thought that would prevent him from ever being a full-time starter in the league, and I think that's certainly been the case so far. But I still see him as a great locker room presence, smart guy, that can be a really long-time backup quarterback in the NFL, make a lot of money, and probably play for a lot of teams over the course of his career. And I think he's on that path.
Chad, I want to ask you, you made a great reference to Doug Matthews, an analogy. And by the way, another piece of the time machine, his grandson just played against my son in a CPA versus USN basketball game, which was really good. His grandson's very good. Here's one I'll give to you in regards to Downing. I know there's going to be a ton of discussion about Downing. It may be clear cut. I'm not mistaking him for a great offensive coordinator, but I've tried to be fair over time when he seems to take so much of the blame. But my reference is Terry Crisp used to talk to Barry Trotz the first year of the Predators, And Barry Trotz would always tinker with the lines. He'd try to come up with a new formula. If I put these guys together against these guys, maybe I can hang in there. But this was the first Predator team that had a bunch of nobodies off the scrap heap. That was an expansion team back then. And Terry Crist would tell him, look, Trotzy, you can shuffle the deck all you want, but if you only have twos and threes in your deck, your options are limited. Now, I'm not going to say that's all that Todd Downing has to work with. He has at least a king in Derrick Henry, even if he used to be an ace. But he doesn't have a whole lot to work with. He has no offensive line. So how do you try to grade based on the hardships that he has been dealt?
It's a great point and a great analogy with what Terry Crist was saying. I completely agree. I watch it. It's also, this is the thing with everything in sports and life and everything in general. It's the blame game, right? So Amy Adams Strunk is saying it's John Robinson's fault. It's in no way Mike Vrabel's fault. I'm siding with Mike Vrabel. John Robinson is gone. That was the problem. We move forward now with Mike Vrabel. Well, if that's the case, Mike Vrabel could easily say it's a John Robinson problem. It's a personnel problem. Offensive line is terrible. We have no great pass catching targets because John Robinson traded away A.J. Brown. It's not my guy Todd Downing's fault that he has nothing to work with. I can buy a lot of that, and I think there's an argument to be made on behalf of Todd Downing because of that if Mike Vrabel wanted to protect him. But what I have a hard time coming to grips with is Todd Downing can start games looking like there is a cohesive plan and they can have a good first drive, and I'm thinking, man, this guy is really good at game planning and coming up with something that works to start a game, even with limited personnel. And someone may come back and argue, well, it's fine to start a game, but you can't make an adjustment when you don't have anything to adjust to. And I do think that's part of the problem personnel-wise. But my biggest glaring issue with Todd Downing is there are times, and you either have this or you don't. Steve Spurrier, one guy that always comes to mind, he just had it as a play caller. He knew what to do and when to do it. And I think you're kind of blessed with that, knowing how to go with the flow of the game, seeing what's going on and being a really good in-game play caller. I don't think Todd Downing has that. I think he's good at installing an offense to fit a personnel, even when that personnel is not very good. I think once the game gets going, he misses some very obvious things. I know your listeners have called in and talked about it. You guys have talked about it. You know, not giving the ball to Derrick Henry in certain spots, not even having Derrick Henry on the field in crucial spots. Derrick brought up not having Chigakonkwo on the field. Crucial spot. There are things like that in play calls that just baffle me, that I don't know that he can get past. He seems to be pretty good at installing an offense and game plan, but I don't think he's very good at all at in-game play calling. And ultimately, if he loses his job, I think that's what's going to cost him his job.
Last one for you, Chad. Chad Withrow is with us, Outkick 360. Official prediction for the game tomorrow night.
I mean, I just don't see any way the Titans win this game. I don't want to be Debbie Downer here for all the Titans fans. But Jacksonville, you know, I was listening. I believe I was listening to you guys on this station this morning, and someone was talking about, you know, the Jags haven't played with any pressure so far. And I'm thinking, I mean, every game has been a playoff game for the Jags during this run. So it's been kind of all pressure if they wanted to make the playoffs. I understand there was a time, probably when they came to Nashville, but they didn't believe they had a chance for the playoffs. They come in here. They handle the Titans. They've been playing better and better all year. I think it was the right decision by Doug Peterson to play his guys against Houston. I think it was the right decision by Mike Vrabel to send his guys. It's two completely different situations going into this game. I think they both benefited from last week in different ways. But I look at the way Trevor Lawrence is playing. Defense is coming along. They got after Ryan Tannehill in the last outing. I think they're going to get after Josh Dobbs with that terrible offensive line. Penalties have killed the Titans. This is just two teams headed in two different directions. Jacksonville's at home. I think Jacksonville wins this thing 24-14. I think it's a double-digit win for the Jags, and they're headed to the playoffs.
Chad, it's so great to hear your voice in the middays. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to hear your voice, Caroline. Willie, it was a fantastic reunion after 11 years apart. D-Mace, great talking to you. And once again, thank you guys for not screaming at me. It's a great, great difference between this show and being on with Jared Stillman.
Nice switch up, isn't it?
I guess I'll be back with Stillman next week. So this was a nice
and you actually got to hear Caroline ask you multiple questions, Chad. That's another.
Every time. I'm like, am I going to hear from Caroline this week? I always try to say goodbye to Caroline on the show because I never hear her voice. So, Caroline, it's great hearing your voice once and for all. So thank you, guys.
Appreciate you, Chad. You can check out Chad and Jonathan Hutton on the postgame show Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. Coming up next, we saw Superman last night. Can that be a consistent thing moving forward as far as the Predators are concerned? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Juice, tonight you break a franchise record getting 64 saves. You knew tonight was going to be a challenge with all the weapons that Carolina has. So what were some of the things you were focused on throughout this game?
I was just trying to see the puck as well as I could. And obviously it's a great team. So, and they shoot a lot of pucks. But, yeah, I was just trying to stay with it.
The news was broken during the game that you've been selected as an All-Star. What does that honor mean to you?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, yeah, obviously, yeah, it's nice.
Did that have you a little bit more jacked up, you think, coming into this game that you had gotten that news?
Well, I knew it a little bit a couple days earlier, so that didn't really affect on that. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. You know, this morning I spoke with Coach Hines, and he said this game was going to be a big measuring stick for your group. What does it mean to your team confidence-wise to get this big win against a top team in the league to start this road trip?
Yeah, hopefully we can build something from this and get some energy, and obviously it's a nice 2 points, too.
Yeah. Congratulations, UC.
Thank you.
UC Soros sets a franchise record 64 saves last night against the Carolina Hurricanes. And Willie, we've been saying all week long, we need the Predators to check these two boxes. One box that was so important, beat the good teams. And the Carolina Hurricanes absolutely, positively is a very good team. And it's because of the heroics that we saw from UC Soros in net last night. The second box that we need them to check is some consistency. It's what David Poile said on Robbie and Rex Road on Tuesday morning, that this team needs to be more consistent. So I want to honor and highlight everything that UC Soros did last night because he was electric last night. But can the Predators continue to beat the good teams and beat the good teams consistently, even if they don't have heroics in net from UC Soros, like they did last night against a red-hot Carolina Hurricanes team?
Well, first of all, let me say this. With Lindsay's interview there that we just played, I had this thought throughout Shea Weber's time as a Predator as well. UC Soros is one of those guys that he just doesn't like talking about himself. You know, he and Shea Weber, well, sort of cut from the same cloth. Amazing competitors, but so quiet by nature. Not really wanting to give themselves the credit. You ask them about their teammates, they're much more likely to give you a longer, more detailed answer. You heard some of those answers. He just came off a 64-save game, and he was kind of like, oh, shucks. You know, he's got a little pecorino like that, too. But that was an amazing performance by him. And that was just a privilege, I think, for all of us that watched that game and got to call it, that you watch something that rarely happens. There hasn't been a goalie that made that many saves since 1991. And that was a great team that they were playing against, a team playing as well as anybody in the league right now. They had been 15-1-2 in their previous 18 games, Carolina. So that wasn't just beat the good teams. That was an elite team. For sure. Now to your question, Caroline, about going forward. And I think this is the ongoing question with the team. If you look at the discussion after the game, it was a classic fuel for the fire on either side of the argument, right? One side of the argument is, look, this team is built to get back to the playoffs. And if everything clicks, it's a veteran team that on paper should be better positioned to do well in the playoffs than the previous couple of teams, okay? The other side of the argument is the skeptical take a look and say, look, that's an example of the gap between the Predators and an elite team. It took a superhuman performance by the goaltender. And by the way, UC Soros is an elite player. And Roman Josi is an elite player. But other than that, I think it was also kind of a telling thing of the rest of the roster. You have good players, but it's players that have to have good years for them to be measured against teams like Carolina who have a deep elite roster, right? So I think that's the thing. They're right in the middle, right? Which way can they go? Can they keep trending in the right direction? That's now 5-1-2 in the last 8. They're starting to score more goals. Last night, they scored five, right? They got outplayed big time. They were hemorrhaging shots. I mean, that was very rarely does any team get that many shots. I don't care who you are. That was a franchise record for Carolina for shots on goal. That's not going to happen every night. But Nashville did find ways to finish. How many times have we been on this show talking about, hey, why can't they buy a goal? They're not scoring enough. Well, they're starting to score. So it's a long journey. You still got over half of the season to go, but I think this team still has to prove that they can consistently stand toe-to-toe with the top teams at a higher level. So I think that's the dilemma. I think it's a classic thing to watch. And going forward, you know, the next chapter is tonight. This is another team, the Capitals, at 8-1-2 in their last 11 games. So they're playing really, really well. You're going to have likely your backup goalie in there and Kevin Lankinen. Washington played last night as well, so you're probably going to get that their backup goalie. So it's another good test to the question, Caroline, that you asked.
Yeah, and that's what I look at this last game. And I've said at the beginning of the season, when UCSR started off a little bit slower, you know, a sub-900 save percentage, I thought this team goes how UCSR goes. If UCSR can be red-hot electric, then this team has a good chance at winning a lot of games. And you mentioned how many shots on goal the Carolina Hurricanes had last night, and they did. And that's credit to UCSR for making those stops. And you mentioned the goal scored by the Predators. And I think that's been a promising trend, even if some of the goals that were scored against Montreal and Anaheim, against the bottom feeders of the league, that the goals are getting spread around. But even though they scored five goals last night, think about what the score could have been if UC Saros hadn't been superhuman last night. I mean, it easily could have been 12-5. And I don't want to take away from UC Saros' performance, but I have to keep that in mind. And my faith in this team to be able to consistently beat the good teams is, yes, you scored five goals, but it could have been a really, really rough loss if you didn't get what you got from UC Saros last night. So I'm kind of almost looking at it at two different things can be true. We can be really excited about UC Saros' performance last night and encouraged from what we saw last night, while also looking at it with an asterisk of how consistent can that be and how much can that really be encouraging, all things considered.
Well, I wouldn't put an asterisk, but because here's the thing. This is Chris Mason's point last night. They have UC Saros, and no player makes a bigger impact on the game in hockey than your goalie. And so he is going to elevate everybody else on that roster. That's different than a lot of teams that are sort of on that bubble right now. If you're taking a look at the playoffs, Nashville's 3 points out of the wild card, and they've played two or three less games than the two teams that occupy the wild card spots right now. So they're right in the mix. They're right on the bubble. And that's kind of what they've been the last couple of years, right? But I would say that Saros is a guy that he's a game changer. But what's missing right now, what has to be part of the equation if you can feel like you can get to the playoffs and have a chance against the teams that end up higher, the Dallases, Colorado will eventually probably be there, some of these other teams that you would consider, Caroline, the teams you're talking about, the good teams, right? Can you beat a good team in the playoffs? They've got to get more from guys like Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson. Philip Forsberg's starting to play well right now. That's another. He's on a roll right now, and it makes a big difference when he's playing that way. Matt Duchene, for example, last night did next to nothing. Zero shot attempts. He had, I think we were looking, 4 seconds of offensive zone time. He was invisible last night. He's had a couple of rough games here. Now, hopefully he can come around. If he may not have to be the same player he was last year, but he's got to be much better than he has been. They've got to be clicking on all cylinders. They need the top players to pull their weight if they're going to get into that category we're talking about. And here's one more thing to think about in this paradox, this dilemma you're talking about, because you've got a lot of fans that are saying, look, I'm tired of the just make it to the playoffs and be a big underdog.
I'm tired.
I got to see playoff success, or we got to go in a different direction. But think about this. With UC Saros on the roster, it's hard to be bad because he's so good. He's going to keep you in games.
But UC Saros was on the roster when they got swept by the Avs. UC Saros was on the roster.
He didn't play. He didn't play in the playoffs.
But even if UC Soros was in net against the Avs, do you think it would have gone differently?
They wouldn't have played the Avs. They would have played the Flames in the first round, not the Avs.
But
don't think that's a totally different series if UC Soros is playing and they play the Calgary Flames instead of the Avs in the first round.
But if they did play the Avs.
It's plausible. Huh?
If they did play the Avs, I'm saying, you know, if UC Soros was in net.
Everybody got smoked by the Avs. Everybody got smoked by the Avs last year, with the exception maybe of the Blues that were sort of in the series. But at the end of the day, the Avs were never going to lose that series. I'm just saying I would like to see UC Soros with, you know, with a chance to win some playoff series. I'd hate to go through a rebuild when I've got a goalie that good. And I see both sides of the argument, and that's why these next couple of months, as you get close to the trading deadline, are essential for the players in that locker room, right? To show that they are good enough to have a chance to have some playoff success, right? They've got to prove to themselves, they've got to prove to everybody else. Because Caroline, you're not the only person that's calling into question what's going on here. That's why this stage is critical.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The NFL owners have voted and agreed. How do we feel about it? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. And hey, be caller 3 now. That is caller 3 to win your opportunity to see Alter Bridge at the Ryman Auditorium on Monday, January 30th. Caller 3, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. So the NFL announced yesterday that they decided to cancel the Bills-Bengals game instead of trying to make it up, instead of, you know, deciding to call it a tie. I think that was the best way to move forward. I said you cannot play that game again. Whether they decided to cancel it, whether they decided to tie, was completely up to the NFL. Now, canceling this game in and of itself is a monumental decision. I mean, it's been about 100 years since the NFL has decided to cancel a football game. I mean, that is an astronomical decision made by the NFL, but in my opinion, the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, DeMar Hamlin, encouraging news coming out of the University of Cincinnati Medical Center that he's been moving his hands and feet. He's been writing things down. He has been talking, communicating with his friends and family. First words out of his mouth when he woke up was, who won the game?
Mm-hmm.
So really encouraging news, and we'll continue to send our thoughts and prayers to DeMar Hamlin and his family. Bills and Bengals game has been canceled. So where do we go next? Because, of course, that leaves the Bills and the Bengals with one fewer game on their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Roger Goodell sent a proposal to all of the owners in the NFL, and all the owners in the NFL had to vote on it today. The proposal was the AFC Championship game would be played on a neutral site, and also with the Ravens and the Bengals and the outcome of that game this weekend. And the owners have officially decided to approve the proposal set by Roger Goodell. So if Buffalo or Cincinnati play in the AFC Championship game, that game will be played on a neutral site. So this is what it verbatim what it says. For the 2022 season only, the AFC Championship game will be played at a neutral site to be determined by the commissioner. If the participating teams played a different number of regular season games, Bills, Bengals,
mm-hmm.
and the lower seeded team in the championship game could have been the number one seed in the AFC if a full 17 regular game season had been played by all AFC clubs. So the Bills,
mm-hmm.
if they would have played all 17 games, the Bills would have had an opportunity to get the number one seed. So in a nutshell, the Bills and Bengals end up making it to the AFC Championship game. The AFC Championship game will be played at a neutral site. And let me just say this. I don't like that.
Mm.
I know that there's going to be somebody who was going to be upset and somebody's going to get the short end of the stick. I don't like the idea of the AFC Championship game being played at a neutral site. I feel like that's such a money-making opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
For local bars, local businesses, so much buzz around the city. And I know that, you know, whatever the owner's finances will be and the ticket sales and whatever, that'll be amongst an owner thing. But I'm just talking about, you know, I'm thinking of bars on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Titans host an AFC Championship game, how much money will be flooded into those bars, into those restaurants, and how much buzz there will be around Nashville. So I don't like the idea of some of the small businesses in the respective cities, whether that's Buffalo or Kansas City or Cincinnati or wherever that might be, that they won't get that opportunity.
I think they still will get the opportunity, because because people are still going to go out and they're still going to go out, you know, to the bars and whether it's in Kansas City, Cincinnati, or Buffalo, they're going to leave their houses to go out to local bars. It's a part of what they do on football Sunday or Saturday. What you're not going to have is, you know, those who work at the stadium. Those, you know, people will be affected by playing it at a neutral site.
That's
but as far
thing.
As like the bars, I think people will flood the bars no matter what. They're going to be out. If your team, if you're the Buffalo Bills and you make it to the AFC Championship game, who's you might say under any other circumstances, you might not have a home game. Well, what happens? Everybody floods the bars. Well, if Cincinnati or Kansas City make it, you just treat it as if your team wasn't the number one, you know, number one seed. What you going to do? You're going to go out to bars, you're going to go out to friends' house, or you're going to go to whatever local establishment there is, and you're going to enjoy the game that way. It's the ones that work at the actual stadium, I believe, will be affected by that. But then again, somebody else will benefit. You know, some other stadium and other workers will benefit from having a game that they were not going to have that week in their stadium. Now they get that extra bump in pay that they may not have gotten if this circumstance had not come up. So the league will find a way around it, and they have. You know, it will be interesting to see if Kansas City and Buffalo make it, or if Cincinnati and Buffalo make it, then where are they going to have the game? That's the question that everybody's going to be asking then. Like, okay, will you have it in a warm city? Will you have it in a dome city? You know, which one will it be? So I think that will be the interesting question asked. Like, okay, these two teams have made it, or the AFC Championship, or the second round of the playoffs is here, and these two teams seem like they're going to win. Where are we going to have the playoffs? Where we're going to have the AFC Championship game.
You know what this reminds me of a little bit is the dilemma when you have something like this, and it was obviously a different set of circumstances, but it sort of created the same dilemma, is when the NBA and the NHL had to come up with a playoff format after the pandemic hit, right? It was nobody's fault. It happened, and we got to figure something out. We can't finish the regular season. We want to have a postseason. So how do we do it? So both leagues got into a room in their own circles. They maybe even consulted each other, but they each came up with different formats. No matter what they did, somebody somewhere was going to squawk and say, this isn't fair to us. This isn't quite right. But and I think we can sit here and pick apart the decision they made here. Maybe they overthought it a little bit. Maybe they should have just kept the winning percentage and said, look, we're going to seed them accordingly. That game wasn't played, or well, let's consider it a tie. We're going to go from there. But either way, it's just one of those things where you got to say to yourself, look, this is an extreme circumstance. Nothing was in anybody's control. We got to make the best of it. It may not be fair, but this is what we have to do. You just have to get over it. So if you're the Bengals and you don't like it, or any of these other teams, you just got to say, look, get over it. Life sometimes throws challenges like this at you. You're just going to have to overcome it.
And whatever.
You guys agree? Like,
no, I agree.
Totally.
There's no way they could have pleased everybody.
Whatever the NFL decided to do, Willie, to your point, somebody was going to get the short end of the stick. There was going to be somebody that was upset about the outcome. But, Willie, to your point, like, get over it. You know, this was something that was so wild and unprecedented that happened, and there had to be decisions that were made amongst emotions made very quickly. So I mean, yeah, just move forward the best way you know possible and get over it. We've got an AFC South championship going down in Jacksonville tomorrow night. Your official predictions, D-Mace?
Oh wow, I think it's going to be a close game, but I just believe that at this point in time, the Jags are a better team, and they have the better quarterback. And if they don't turn the football over, then they win the game by 7 or more points. But it's up to the Titans to make them turn it over. So I'm picking the Jags 24-17.
All right, 24-17, D-May's taking the Jags. Willie, what's your official prediction?
You know, I really want to pick the Titans here. I think it'd be a great story of overcoming just a month of a nightmare, you know, level of adversity. This would be a great win if they could pull it off. I just don't see them getting enough guys back, the Titans. And I agree with what Chad said here. The Jaguars, I've been one that's been saying throughout the week, look, maybe you can make the Jaguars feel some pressure if you can hang into the game in the fourth quarter. And Jacksonville hasn't really done it before. And the Titans have a lot of players on that field that have won a lot more games over the last few years. But they're on such a roll, the Jaguars. I wonder if they can just blow the Titans out of the water early and not make it that close. I'm still a little surprised it's only 6.5. So I like the Titans and the points, but I think the Jaguars should win the game. And so I'll take the Jaguars to win the game.
I think the Jaguars should win the game, and that's exactly why I'm taking the Titans to win. I have the same feeling going into this game that I did going into the game against Green Bay. I had no reason to pick the Titans to win other than just a weird feeling. I think the Titans and Mike Vrabel are equipped to win games like this. Games you absolutely positively have to win, and you do it. I just don't know if the Jags have enough experience with that. So I'm going to take the Titans to win 24-21. It's going to be a close one. That's going to do it for us today. It is a Fireball Hot Take Friday, so you know Jared Stillman's got some hot takes about the AFC South Championship going on tomorrow night. Stillman and Company's up next. We'll be back Monday at 11 a.m.
Peace.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the sunshine.